you on the phone with Bill.
Great, thanks. Bill.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling. I'm very happy that you take time out to do this.
Oh, yeah. I've been a fan of yours for quite a while, actually.
Oh, excellent. That's nice to hear.
Yeah. I was actually just watching you on the Annie cam animating for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to get this film done for Sundance, and the deadline September 1st, and I still have about 20 minutes to animate, so it's a lot of work.
Yeah, no kidding.
A lot of drawing.
And, I mean, you do all the animation yourself on all these things, right?
Yeah, this film I'm doing all the... Do you want me to speak slowly? Are you writing or are you recording?
I'm recording.
Okay. This film is a bit different in that for the first time I'm scanning it on computer rather than shooting it on film.
Okay.
And so it's all pencil, which is really fast. It's really easy. So I do all the drawings to animate, and then I go in and shade them with, as you can see, with my pencil.
Uh-huh.
So it gives it a real depth, a real three-dimensional look. And then I hand them over to my assistants, and they color them on the computer.
Okay.
And then I'll output them for film, obviously.
Cool. What's your pencil of choice?
Just, you know what, I'm very low tech. It's a number 2 everyday, what are those pencils? I mean, I'm sure you get them at Staples out there just like I do here.
Yeah.
What's the brand? Ticonderoga.
Okay.
I know you probably get the same thing.
Yeah.
So I don't have any proprietary software. It's a proprietary pencil, I guess.
You should talk to him about getting an endorsement deal or something, you know.
I know, I should. I did a whole feature film on Ticonderoga pencils. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's got to be worth something there.
Yeah, right. They should pay for that.
Yeah. So when you first started out, in a lot of your shorter films that you were doing, you were doing those fully in colored pencil, correct?
Yeah, colored pencil. And I love colored pencil. I'll probably still continue to do it because there's some nice effects you can get with it, but it's too slow.
Yeah.
To do a feature in colored pencil would take way too much time. So it's just easier to color it on the computer.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been doing that, since you started doing the features?
The first time I did that was with the Kanye West music video.
Uh-huh.
And that one I had to do it in a week. So
wow.
Very, very quick turnaround. So that's why I didn't do colored pencil. I did black and white pencil. And I just realized that this is the way to go because it's so quick. You get a lot of detail. You can be very expressive. You can be very moody. It gives it a real nice texture.
Right.
And it's different. It's different than anything else I've seen out there. So that's why I like it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've always loved about your animation styles. It's so organic, and you can feel the life in it, and just the fact that each one of these is hand-drawn and hand-shaded. And
it's a real issue for me because you look at some of the Pixar films and the DreamWorks films, and certainly they're beautiful, they're mm-hmm. beautifully made, but they're so perfect.
Yeah.
And they're so clean that I feel like that imperfection is sometimes more interesting to look at.
Yeah.
That to see mistakes is really cool. And so my films are full of mistakes and full of imperfections, and it makes it more human. It makes it real. It makes it feel like it's made by a human being.
Yeah.
And so I really am a big fan of mistakes, and I think there's a lot of great creativity comes out of mistakes.
Yeah.
You see things that you're not expecting that are a surprise, and you didn't even think of it, and you say, wow, that's a great idea, and then you follow that direction. So mistakes are a great thing, and imperfection is a great thing. I think, perfect is boring. If everything's perfect, it's really boring, and that's why I like the imperfections.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of reminds me of, in Islamic mosaics and things like that, mm-hmm. Each one of the little pieces that they put into these absolutely beautiful mosaics, they mm-hmm. chip a little bit of something out of there just so that
I heard.
Yeah, so
heard
that
about that.
Yeah.
So each one's a little different. I like that.
Yeah, and I think that's great, and I think that works so wonderfully with what you do. And the fact that you have so much control over everything, was there ever a point where you flirted with the idea of, starting up a studio with multiple animators, or was it always just going to be you?
You know, that's an excellent question. I didn't want to become like Walt Disney, where I became more of a manager.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the pleasure of this business is doing the drawings and thinking up the ideas. And I think if I hired a bunch of animators and started doing television or children's animation or something like that, I would become too involved in the bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to stay away from that. I just like doing my own films at my own tempo, with my own deadlines, and not worrying about, you know, if other people are following my, you know, my style and my character designs.
Right.
I did, are you getting feedback?
No, I'm not getting anything.
My phone has a little bit of hiss on it.
Oh.
I did do some live-action films. I did three of them. They were called J. Lyle, J. period L-Y-L-E,
mm-hmm.
and Guns on the Clackamas, C-L-A-C-K-A-M-A-S,
uh-huh.
and then a documentary about this poet called Walt Curtis.
Okay.
And I realized making these films that doing live action, there's very little control. The weather can do things. The equipment can go bad. The actors are temperamental.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily want to do it the way you want to do it. And I realized how difficult it is to do things in live action, to make films in live action, and how when you do animation, it's almost 100% control.
Right.
I mean, you really... there's no issues with unions or with weather or noises from cars or, you know, bad lighting and stuff like that. Everything is under my hand.
Right.
And I guess I'm spoiled with it now. I just wouldn't do it any other way.
Yeah. Did you, I mean, obviously you got interested in animation probably pretty early, like most of
yes.
us do. But what really made you decide that that's what you wanted to pursue and that's the direction you wanted your life to go in?
Well, I was drawing little cartoons when I was a very young age. Then I saw, I think it was a Daffy Duck film, and it was so funny. It was so magical that, you know, these cartoons were moving and talking and making noises and color. And I just realized very early that that's what I wanted to do. I really had no idea that there was a profession of animation. You know, there really was a job until I saw the old Walt Disney show. I think Wonderful World of Disney it was called as a kid.
Right.
And he would go backstage and talk to the animators. You could see them at the drawing boards making these films. And I said, that's what I want to do. That's the guy. I want to be that guy, you know, who draws Cinderella or Dumbo or whatever. And Walt Disney was a huge influence on, I mean, almost every animator living today, and
right.
certainly on me too, because he made animation a really respected profession, a real prestigious profession.
Yeah.
And so at a very young age, I knew I wanted to be one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Did you follow like Ub Iwerks and like all those guys that were, I mean, basically doing what you do now, where they would start and finish a complete animation?
What do you mean, do I follow them?
I mean, did you, you know, once you got a little bit older, did you try and, you know, track down a lot of those old cartoons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a guy by the name of Tex Avery, who was a big influence on me, and I always looked for his films.
Yeah.
Him and Bob Clampett were guys that I really loved their stuff, and I was always looking for their films. Then, of course, the guy by the name of... what was his name? Preston Blair, who put out a cartoon book that I got when I think it was a 12 or something like that, how to do animation. And I discovered that he was one of the great animators of the Fantasia section, where it was the Dance of the Hours, I believe it's called,
okay.
where the hippos
yeah.
And the ostriches were ballet dancing.
Uh-huh.
And also he did the famous Red Hot Riding Hood sexy girl dancing, which is amazing feat of animation. animation. Mm-hmm. And I tracked him down. I don't usually do this, you know, with living animators, but I tracked him down at living in Carmel. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend in Carmel, so I went by his studio, and you know, I was just in awe of this guy, and he showed me boxes and boxes of his great animation. So today I have some of his cartoons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was one of my inspirations, certainly.
Great. So it was always kind of there, like you always had that, like, drive towards it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else I would be doing right now if I wasn't an animator. You know, I was an illustrator for a while, and I did political cartoons and caricatures, but quite frankly, I wasn't that successful. I mean, I got by, but it wasn't really, I didn't feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
Whereas in animation, I feel 100% comfortable. I feel like I was born to do it.
Yeah.
People think I made a pact with the devil to be able to do animation as an independent, but I just feel I'm very lucky.
Yeah, it is really amazing. I mean, I can't really think of anybody else that has done it to the extent that you have.
Yeah, there are a few out there that are starting to do it. I think Don Hertzfeld is one of the guys who's very successful as an independent animator, making his own films and selling them himself.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, it's very limited in terms of people who can survive as an independent.
Yeah. How do you feel about sort of the state of animation the way it is today? I mean, you know, there was the famous shutting down of the Walt Disney...
Right.
Animation studios, which I guess now has been sort of re-resurrected by John Lasseter.
I think the state of animation is excellent, and I think it's only going to get bigger. It just seems like a lot of people want to see animation. There's a hunger for it, a need for it. You look at Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network, the Japanese animation that's coming in, a lot of the independent animation that's just now coming out of people in Europe and France, Germany, and Spain, and England are putting out wonderful animated films. The stop-motion films of Nick Park. And it's not just all computer animation. There's a lot of really interesting techniques. You know, Tim Burton's stuff is always original and always unique. So I think it's a really excellent time to not only study animation, but be an animator.
Yeah. You think it was a good thing that things kind of, you know, because there was such a big boom of it for quite a while, and then it kind of died down. Do you think that made a lot of animators or people that really wanted to do it stick in there and got rid of a lot of the people that were just kind of there?
That's a tough question. Quite frankly, I don't get that involved in the industry, the LA industry side. So you probably know more about it than I do. But I think John Lasseter is a really a breath of fresh air. I think he's gonna make some great moves with animation at Disney and of course at Pixar. So I believe that he's a savior because he's not a bureaucrat. He's not like Eisner. He doesn't think about money first. He thinks about the quality of the films.
Right.
And that's his first consideration and the creativity behind the films. And I think that's what the industry needs.
Yeah, it definitely feels like he's coming from more of like a fan standpoint.
Yeah, totally.
At the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I was looking at your Anycam here, and it says that you're at your board most weekdays from, like, 10 to 5.
Right.
How many cells do you typically do in a day?
First of all, I don't do cells. I just do pencil drawing, so it's pencil on paper. You know, it varies. Sometimes I can do 20 seconds of film a day, sometimes 30 seconds of film time a day. So that breaks down to about five shots, maybe four or five shots a day. And that breaks down to about, I don't know, 15 to 20 drawings per shot.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the math? 100 drawings to 150 drawings a day, something like that.
Wow.
And, you know, it's fun. I really, really get into it, and it goes pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's very pleasurable. It's a very zen-like thing. But I, quite frankly, I get up around 6:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and I start drawing then at home.
Okay.
And then I bring those drawings to the office and finish them up, and then maybe do some new drawings. And then after 5, I will go home, and I'll do some artwork at home, too. So they're long days,
yeah.
and but it's a pleasurable experience. It's a very... A very nice experience. I listened to some music. I just bought a new Connie Francis CD. I've been listening to that while I draw. And
yeah.
It just feels like the drawings just flow out. It just really, really comes out.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I went to art school. I actually went to the Columbus College of Art and Design, and I saw you.
Oh, yeah.
I saw you give a presentation there a few years ago.
I've been there, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody was always like, you know, I just want to draw pictures for a living. And
yeah.
you know, it seems like even if you're an illustrator, you know, you spend so much time, like, doing, like, little sketches and doing this thing and doing that thing, but it really seems like you just draw all day long.
Well, the structure I use is I come up with an idea. The idea for Idiots and Angels, I don't know where it came, actually. It's about this guy who grows wings. Actually, I should be talking about Hair High, excuse me.
yeah, tell us about Hair High. Yeah,
yeah, that's the film we're promoting.
Yeah.
That film came from a dream I had, and that dream was this car at the bottom of a lake,
mm-hmm.
and inside were two skeletons, and the water current was blowing their hair up into the current, and bugs were crawling in it, and their skeletal orifices,
mm-hmm.
and the car magically turns on, and the radio turns on, and the car lurches forward in the mud and the muck, and the fish scatter, and it comes up on shore, and drives through this little Midwestern town, and drives up to the prom,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I woke up, and I thought, gee, that's kind of an engaging image.
Yeah.
Kind of a nice fantasy. So I extended that into the to a longer script, and I shouldn't say it's a script so much as it was a storyboard, and that's really the important part, is to build a really good storyboard. I think it's about 200 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And each frame of the storyboard was a different shot. And it's pretty detailed. You know, I get in there and do the details. And so once I have that, then I put that in front of my drawing board. And, I mean, it feels like it all comes on top of my head, but it's actually been very well planned.
Mm-hmm.
And I go page by page through the storyboard, drawing each shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just follow the... it's more of a graphic novel, actually. Follow the graphic novel as I do the film. So it's all chronological.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, for your listeners or readers, the graphic novel is available on NBM Publishing. It's called Hair High.
Oh, great.
The book is available.
And that's of the storyboards that you originally did?
Yeah, those are the original storyboards.
Oh,
yeah.
Great, yeah.
So it's actually better than storyboards you'd see at a big studio. It's more like a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Great. Do you usually, is there somebody that you usually bounce your ideas off of, you know, when you come up with something like that?
Oh, yeah, I think that's really important. I think that a lot of filmmakers get lost in their own world, and they sort of lose perspective. And I think that's a big danger, and so I generally like to show the storyboard around in a rough stage to, you know, a bunch of people that I really respect.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will give me their feedback and tell me what they think. And then with that, I will redo the storyboards, with those changes included. And then when the film is done at a pretty rough stage, let's say the film has pretty much been shot, the sound is in there, some mock music is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do some more screenings, and I get feedback on the film. And these are, sometimes I will have anonymous focus groups, you know, maybe 10 people, mostly young kids, because that's my audience.
Right.
And then I will show it to some people who I know and respect and are fans and get their feedback. And so with those two groups of people giving me comments, I feel confident that I can make the changes, make the appropriate changes, and hopefully have a successful film.
Mm-hmm. Great. I noticed, like, too, that you have, I was looking at the credits for Hair High and just, like, some of the actors and stuff that you have gathered to do different voices on there. Mm-hmm. That must be a lot of fun. I mean, you've got David Carradine, Keith Carradine in here, Matt Groening, Delbert Maroney, a lot of great talent just in there just doing the voices.
Yeah, it was delightful. That came about by a meeting I had with Martha Plimpton, who's an old friend of mine and a distant relative. I think we were at a bar drinking, and I was telling her my problems with getting major distribution for my films. And if I had some stars, you know, it might help. And so she was really kind and said, well, let me make a few phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so she called a lot of her friends up, some of her famous friends, and they all knew of me,
mm-hmm.
and they all thought it was a great idea to do a voice for me, and they worked for scale, which was really,
oh, great,
really wonderful. I couldn't afford it, obviously, their DreamWorks kind of payroll.
Yeah.
I just don't have that kind of payroll.
Yeah.
And they were mostly in L.A., and so I went out to L.A. for 2 days and did 2 days of voiceovers, and they were all delightful. It was wonderful for me because I'd never really worked with such classy professional voiceover artists, and you could tell these people knew how to do their craft, knew how to become a voice. You know, some of them we did it in one or two takes, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so easy.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Do you usually do, like, a scratch vocal track? Do you normally do all the voices for it as sort of a guideline? Or how does that work?
This one we didn't. Sometimes we do. I don't know why we didn't do a scratch voiceover track. I guess I didn't want to influence the their actors' voices. I just wanted to let them, you know, see what they came up with. And the voices we did first anyway, it was... I think I had done some of the animation that did not have dialogue on it, and I showed them the characters. I showed them the design of the character. I told them a little bit about the personality of the character, and let them go loose on it. So they pretty much created their own voiceover character, and of course we videotaped them doing the voices.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did the animation, sometimes I would incorporate their gestures and movements and personality in the film. But basically, it was just their voices that we used. And, you know, we didn't really need to do scratch voices.
Mm-hmm. And Hair High, you had been working on that for... quite a while, wasn't it? Finished?
Yeah, that was a long-term project. I'll tell you the backstory with that. I had done a TV special for the Cartoon Network, and I got a good chunk of money for it. It was a half-hour special, and so I thought this would cover a really my breakthrough film, and so I went full bore on it. I did really what I thought was detailed animation. I did, like I said, big-name voices, a lot of big-name voices. I got a big studio, very expensive studio. I hired 12 artists to help me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized after about 9 months that I didn't have enough money to pay for everybody. So I really had to slow down the project and work... you know, work sort of cut rate, and that really delayed the release of the film. It was unfortunate because the first festival we got into, the film was not completed,
mm-hmm.
and so we had to show a film that a print that I was not happy with.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, it took me another 6 months to get some money to finish the film up, and now the film is, you know, perfect for my taste. It's really excellent film.
Uh-huh.
and so it was an extended production period, and it took us a long time to get the theatrical release, and so that's another that was another delay because it played the festival circuit for almost 2 years, I think, which is longer than normal.
Yeah. And so this is going to be nationally distributed, or is it?
Yeah, it is. Actually, L.A. is one of the last screenings we've arranged. I think we still have San Francisco to do and a couple other big cities, but it's already opened in New York to rave reviews, and around the world to great reviews. So we're really excited about L.A. And this is the one that qualifies us for the Academy, and you know this is the home of animation, so I'm really excited about the LA screening, and we hope to get a bunch of the personalities, the stars, to be there to present the film. We have one star that's already coming, but we can't announce his name because he's incognito.
Okay. And when is that release in
that'll be the 13th, April 13th.
April 13th.
Friday,
okay.
The 13th at the Lemley 5, and everybody who comes gets a free Bill Plimpton drawing.
Oh, great.
And there'll be a Q&A afterwards, and we may have a little party. We haven't found a place yet, but we may have a little gathering somewhere.
Great. And people can find out all this information, like where things are and what's going on your website.
Yeah, on hairhigh.com. Hold on. Carrie? If someone wants to find out about the L.A. screening of the film, can they find that on hairhigh.com?
Yes.
All the Lemley stuff, all the info?
Yeah, that's all on there.
How to get tickets, all that stuff is on hairhigh.com.
Okay, great.
Or if they want to find out more about my stuff, my new projects, they can go on plimtoons.com.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and watch the Annie Cam. That's a lot of fun.
And we will be showing one of the guide dog, the new short, short before Hair High, so that'll be an added bonus.
Great, and that's available on DVD as well, right?
That is available on DVD, yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was looking through the website, and there's a lot of great stuff on there. I saw that you actually have some of the drawings from.
Yeah. From you get some original drawings.
Yeah, that's really great, and the graphic novel and everything is on there as well.
That's what you know. That's the thing that Disney sort of pioneered is how to maximize your release and merchandise and marketing and all that stuff. So I'm kind of stealing from his lead there.
Yeah, well, I think everybody has at this point.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, well, it's great. I have one last question for you.
Sure.
And this has absolutely nothing to do with what we've talked about, but I figure, you know, the guy that did Guide Dog and Guard Dog would know the answer to this. We ask everybody we interview, in your professional opinion, do dogs have lips?
Yeah, I've seen lips on dogs.
Okay. Did you draw lips when you were drawing?
I did,
dogs?
And I did draw lips.
Okay.
I did a film with Jay Lyle, the live action film. There's a dog, a cartoon dog on there, and I gave him big lips. Lips are fun. Lips are funny.
Great. Well, great. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. And,
well, thank you. Do you need any artwork or images or animation?
Sure. If you want to send us something, if you have a trailer or something, and you'd like, okay. We could put it up on the website as well.
Can I put you? Yeah, that'd be great. Can I put you up on with Carrie, and she's running the distribution here at the studio?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Eric, and he wants to run a trailer.
Oh, okay. Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good.
Good, yeah. We've got like an audio-video section on our website, tlchicken.com, and, you know, if you guys want to put a trailer up there or something, you can just send it to us and we'll think about
awesome.
It.
Oh, awesome. Okay, I guess, what's your email address?
My email is, it's Watchman, WATCHMAN, at tlchicken.com.
tlchicken.com.
Uh-huh.
Okay, cool.
And if you got any stills or anything that we could use for Hair High or pictures of Bill that we could that we could put on there along with this interview, that would be great as well.
Okay, awesome.
Great.
Okay, I'll send to you some point today.
Okay, sounds great.
Hopefully sooner.
All right.
All right, hold on a minute.
Okay.
Yes? Okay, can I please have your address also? Bill wants to send you a DVD.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's 4316.
4316.
North Damon Avenue.
North Damon?
Yep. Damon. Mm-hmm. Apartment 2.
Okay.
And that's Chicago, Illinois. 60618.
60618.
Uh-huh.
All right, sounds good.
Great, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.